And tell you briefly what leads to initiation. The spiritual path could only take you on your own momentum up to consciousness acting on energy. As we mentioned a few days ago, the various levels of the spirit, where it goes from matter acting on matter, which is this creative world, back to beingness acting on beingness, which is the pure divine self. By our own spiritual momentum, the brilliance of the soul is only 9 million. It has the light of 9 million suns. This soul here has the brilliance of 9 million suns. That is how bright your soul is. Yet it cannot go beyond the law of creation, which is consciousness acting on energy. If you see a God-realized man on the earth, which is consciousness acting on consciousness, you are seeing twice 9 million suns standing in the human flesh. And if he was to suddenly explore that energy into space, you can imagine what will happen. When they say God has become flesh, that is a level God can meet man by becoming the Christ-realized individual and encasing all that energy in human form. Yet we who are unrealized can only go up to consciousness acting on energy, carrying a life potential, an atomic potential, of the brilliance of 9 million suns. But imagine now, when you have entered the timeless state and fully Christ realized, having 18 million suns brilliance. You imagine when you saw Jesus on this earth what he was. People did not realize what a realized man is. They thought they just saw an ordinary human being walking on the earth. But if he was to suddenly unfold that power that was truly his, it would integrate the whole universe. That's why they call it Avatara, descent of the Godhead into the flesh. Now, picture for one moment the personal aspect of God having the brilliance of 18 million suns. What is the ratio of God itself? This is only a limited aspect at the halfway mark of the tremendous atomic power that's locked up in the being, that is fully realized. And picture God way behind it all, holding the universe up. It's a staggering amount of power that's behind it. You can't begin to comprehend. If you read the autobiography of the yogi, it mentions Babaji. It states that no one can begin to fathom the transcendental power of the height that this master has reached. You can't begin to fathom what this force is. And yet he sits down like a man living on the earth plane, and give and take he's over 1,000 years of age, the tremendous potential that is locked up in flesh. John said, and the Word was made flesh. Imagine, in the beginning was the Word, in the very beginning of this whole cosmos, a cosmic force field. This cosmic audible life current crystallizes itself, the total magnitude of it coming down and becoming flesh. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word is God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt in man. If the soul that is unrealized has only the brilliance of 9 million suns, and the realized soul of a Christ individual has 18 million suns brilliance, picture for one moment what is God's brilliance. When Oppenheimer saw the atomic bomb explode, he made a statement that you will find exactly in the Bhagavad Gita. We have discovered God, he's like 9 million suns. But he only saw what the brilliance of one soul, of the soul is. And this was his declaration. He didn't begin to see the brilliance of what it would be behind it all. The atom is giving us a small picture behind this principle. Yet in man, stupid as he is, he carries all of this power locked up in him. And yet at the same time, if he is realized, he has this tremendous force field to work with. The link between the soul and God via the Christ Self is called initiation. This is why Jesus went to John and said to John, baptize me. And John says, no, you baptize me. And Jesus said, no, you baptize me. Well, picture for one moment two grown men arguing who should throw a little water in each other's head. If that is all what baptism meant. It meant initiation, but Jesus went on to say, suffer it to be so. In other words, endure this particular confrontation that I am asking in a humble way. Endure it. For this is the way of righteousness. In other words, this is the link. It's the link that links back the soul to the Creator. And you being a realized man in the flesh, be willing to endure it and link me back, knowing fully well you have transferred the mantle to my consciousness in a previous life, and the role is no longer demanding of you to live in the outer world as a manifested master. Go ahead now, link this energy back into me. So John went ahead and initiated Jesus. That is where he said he baptized him. Now, in the inner light, the disciples were able to see as they closed their eyes and saw what went on in initiation. They saw the dove descending down, and they heard the voice, this is my beloved Son, in whom I am well pleased. That means to say, in this particular conscious level, the brilliance of the soul now is 18 million suns. And here, it holds the universe as a force field. It sustains the earth. It sustains everything. And because of that, this sun is embedded now or enshrined in flesh. The disciples of Jesus, or the initiates present at that time, were able to see this light inside. But imagine seeing the light, how blinding it can be. They only saw a little speck of it. That is why when he asked the disciples at a later date, who do men say that I am? Some said he was a prophet. Some said he was a holy man. Then Peter said, thou art Christ. And then he told Peter, I didn't tell you that. The Father which is in you revealeth to you. Peter got a glimmer of the intensity of the light inside to understand at what level Master Jesus' body was vibrating from. And at this little glimmer of light, Peter was called Saul. His name was Simeon or Simon. He was called Peter. And he said, upon this rock I will build my church. Meaning, upon this realization is to make real concrete hard like a rock, an actual experience from within. Upon this actual experience of you seeing the Christ light in your own self, you can build now the inner temple and go back to the Creator itself. He was actually making Peter aware of his own Christ light, but Peter could not stay in that Christ light because he was not fully identified with it. But as a disciple, he would have to work his way back, and he would have to use the techniques given to him by Jesus. So when he was initiated by Jesus, he told them, unto you are given the keys of the kingdom of heaven, but unto the masses never. He meant that they had within them the actual technique of unlocking the full potential of the soul back into the Christ-realized state, where they could see this tremendous power locked up in them and let it work. Now science comes along and tells us that our body is atomic energy and that it has music. It's vibrating in the atmosphere as music and light. And Yogananda went to a certain yogi in the mountains and wanted the yogi, or the saint, to give him an experience in cosmic consciousness. And the teacher said to him, "I can't give it to you. Your body is not ready yet. If I only touch you with my finger, you'll burn up." Imagine that statement. "If I only touch you with my finger, you'll burn up." He says, "You are like a 50-watt bulb, and you're asking for 5 billion volts to go through you instantaneously." You know what happened to a 50-watt bulb? It cinderized itself. He says, he's asking for a certain experience of God realization. When we are dealing with God, we are dealing with a tremendous power. We're not using it to work figuratively, we're using it literally. We're talking of atomic energy locked up in this body. Only in this body, the five forces of the universe are in a state of truce. Earth, water, air, fire, ether. Outside, they're in constant conflict. And they hold this universe up in the state of conflict. Amazing how in a state of conflict the universe exists. And yet within us, it's in a state of truth and we are held together. Can you fathom the mystery of the Creator? Outside of the body, from the surface of the skin on, these five forces are at war with each other. And inside the surface of the skin, these five forces are in a state of truce. That is a fantastic mystery, the surface of the skin. This skin that you see, this flesh, holds the bond or the balance between the outer forces and the inner forces. The Creator has placed a fantastic power field there. That's why he said he became flesh. The dividing line between his force field outside and the force field inside is the Creator himself in the form of flesh. When we look at the body, we don't realize we are looking at the creative power crystallized here, holding the dividing line between the inner world and the outer world. Now, we need the evidence of this. Science is a long way to bring this evidence to us. Therefore, the ancient mystics had to find a shorter way to it. They realized that the only way to get to this inner world to validate for themselves is to go back to the Christ intelligence. But they had to have some technique. They had to be introduced to some technique, and that is what initiation or baptism is. I don't mean throwing water in your head. There is a particular method in which the forces are shifted inside for you to climb in consciousness. It must occur in you. But at the same time, it is not existing outside of you. This particular principle is already pre-existing in you. It sounds funny now that it's pre-existing, that it's predestined already. But God's will is already set up as predestination because it's inherent in here. We cannot make new laws of the creation. Every law that we discover pre-exists before discovery. And every law that is utilized correctly according to divine consciousness is divine will. So we don't have no new laws. We're only rediscovering or constantly uncovering pre-existing laws of higher and higher potentials, higher and higher levels. They're all here already. There's nothing new. So when Solomon said there's nothing new under the sun, he was fully convinced and well aware as an initiate what was going on in his body. The initiate is given a way to validate once and for all, but God has become him. And initiation is that particular process to which he unlocks it. Now, in ancient days, the initiate was given the technique when he was past 21 or an adult. It was never given to young people for many reasons. The body is not set. At 21, the bones have come into a maturity, but they're not completely gelled 100%. At 28, 7 years after, everything is set. So initiation did not begin for a human being after 28 years of age. But many people did not live past 20 years of age for a long time, and then up to 28. And not too long ago was 32 was the lifespan. So many people did not have an opportunity. And the early Christians were thrown into the arena. Many of the parents were killed and their offspring was left abandoned. So the early initiates had to find a way to make provisions for it. They then decided, years after, to institute now baptism at birth, with a stipulation that there would be two representatives or two initiates who would, at a later date when the child came of age, to initiate them. Those two individuals were called godparents. So a child then was then granted what is called the benediction of temporary baptism, given a name, and then assigned a godparent who was an initiate in their own right, and then when the children came of age, they will seek out the godparent, and the godparent will initiate them into the technique of going inward. That was the period called confirming or confirmation, thus preparing them after a certain period of growth for Holy Communion. This process was then kept sacred after a while, but as like everything else, it turns into a ritual and loses its truth. And then the political popes came along. They eventually destroyed everything. And what we have now, instead of Christianity, is true state, we have now is churchianity. So we end up having what is called a byproduct of the ancient initiate life. The actual initiation will not be tonight, it's tomorrow night. But those who show up tomorrow night, it is not by my coercion, it is strictly by the grace of the masters. They will open the doors from now on till tomorrow night to make it possible for you to arrive. Otherwise, they will block you all the way around if you are not ready. And if you feel inside of yourself that you aren't ready, you don't know, you can't assess this principle. They are the ones who know your readiness. They are the ones who know where you leave off in your last life. You don't know where you left off in your last life. They know exactly where you left off. They are the ones who are taking you back home. You're not taking yourself back home. I labored under that illusion many years ago. I'm taking myself back to God, couldn't find, how did I get back? Come to find out, I am not doing a single thing, they're the ones who are doing it all. And they have planned out the salvation of man long before I ever born in this body to come along and do it. What I'm doing is strictly following their plans. And many of us here have been foreseen by them. In the autobiography of a yogi, Babaji has said, I foresee many saints waiting to be awakened in Europe and America. Many not even born yet. And this conversation was going on with Yukteswar way back in the 1860s. So you can see, we sitting down here and thinking we are on our way back to the Creator, not realizing that long before we ever sat down here and got born, our lives are already being planned out for our salvation. It's amazing to come to the realization when you go inward to discover that your salvation was long prepared for you, and you would never have made a mistake and get off the path, because the concern of the great ones for our lives is so great, their love is so pronounced, that we are pulled back in spite of our faults. We are drawn back not by our mere willing. It is because we have earned it in previous lives. We have earned the right to return via the initiate life. The initiate life is always in every generation. It is a system that is handed down by word of mouth. There is no written principles for two reasons. One, it becomes no longer sacred when you write it down. Two, it must be lived. So to write it down and leave it, no one will practice it. Because it's handed down orally, individuals have to live it. This is one of the requisites of the initiate life, that we live it. Now, what is required in initiate life are five basic truths. They involve our five senses. It's a very simple life that involves our five senses. And the first involvement is what we eat. Because that's the very first thing they give us after we breathe in the first air. The mother's breast has to be prepared by nature with milk to nourish us, to exist. And the Creator cannot leave us hanging in space without providing some way of nutrition. So the very first discipline of the initiate life is food. And nature has left her mark how we should follow the nutritional path back to the Creator Source by organizing the nutritional pattern. She has grown trees bearing fruit and nuts that get the rays of the sun at dawn because they're high off the ground and the rays at an angle. Therefore, those rays permeate those types of food, and at the same time, we as earth people, our intestinal tract secretes certain chemicals to handle those types of food at that particular time. It doesn't secrete all in an active state. Some are in a dormant state. Nevertheless, they're in there. But they will handle those type of food that comes down from the tree at dawn. Now, in the middle of the day, nature has provided by her own methods food that go above the ground. And she secretes, again, those very type of chemicals necessary for handling those type of food above the ground. Equally true, she did not intend us to eat too much at night. Our purpose was to realize ourselves and shut down and enter inner consciousness. Therefore, the food that grow under the ground are very limited. You don't have too many. And that is the type of food that nature will allow the intestinal tract to handle. Now, man deviated from this process. In his deviation, he consumed the animal kingdom, the bird kingdom, the marine life kingdom, and the origin of the cell life, the egg. And in his folly, he crossed all the boundary lines in his ignorance, eating all different things at different times, as he was driven out into survival among the planets. Here he's caught up in his own ignorance, until he's given the chance to reactivate his consciousness and start the process all over again. In this age, we're given the chance to realize it. In certain ages, we did not have the chance. We lost it. Again, in this age, we have the chance. The fruits and nuts in the morning, the vegetables that go above the ground in the middle of the day, and if we are still meat eaters, then the four-legged creatures and the two-legged ones are the ones to be eaten in the middle of the day, because they move around on the earth at that time. At night, those that grow under the ground And if you have to eat the flesh again, marine life and the egg or origin of life in the cell kingdom at night. So heavy meat or flesh products are in the middle of the day. The lighter ones are at night. You see how nature's got it all organized. Long before we ever came along to recognize it and discover our mistakes. Now, we were not supposed to eat them. We were told not to eat them after the flood. Prior to the flood, we ate them all because we wanted to eat them. Our cravings became strong. As we ate them, our tendencies began to change. Our electrical nature changed. And if you go back to your readings or scriptures, you'll see it said man became worse than the beast in the field prior to the flood. And the Lord was disturbed and decided to destroy it all by flooding the whole continent or whatever you want to do. What is intended in that statement? That man constantly consuming the animal kingdom, the electrical nature of the animal will tend to dominate the electrical nature of man and thereby subdue his spiritual forces. Now, the animal utilizes earth, water, fire, air. These four forces the animal is subjected to. It does not utilize ether. Man utilizes ether. He has one force he has to pay back. Earth, water, fire, air, ether. He has to return these forces because he uses it. He's on parole in his body through the use of these five forces. Now, Peter is an example of what happened when he left the animal kingdom. In the case of the flood, when they were told not to eat, not even of the blood of the animal, that's why the Jehovah Witness are very adamant in their idea of blood, but they still eat the flesh. So you can imagine they don't understand what they're doing too. The initiate is to realize that the flesh and the blood is the electrical nature that holds us back in our meditative life. It isn't that the animal dying from pain that the initiate would not eat the meat. That's not the reason why he's not eating the meat. He's not eating the meat because the animal dies in pain, or that meat has toxins and due to the adrenaline that is secreted when the animal dies from pain. That's not the reason why he's not eating it. Those are very valid reasons too. But the reason why he's not eating it is because of the electrical nature of the animal kingdom tends to dominate the electrical nature of the human kingdom, and thereby reducing man to a lower level, preventing man from rising beyond consciousness acting on energy. Now, the animal kingdom utilizes matter acting on matter, energy acting on matter, consciousness acting on matter, and energy acting on energy. Up to this level, the animal kingdom is still in dominance. Above that level, we find now consciousness acting on energy. Here is man. But man is not realized in that level, consciousness acting on energy. Here he is still subjected to karma. He is subjected to time. It's consciousness acting on consciousness, which is the Christ state. Then man is liberated. For the first time, he enters what is called master consciousness, guru consciousness, or avatar consciousness, or Christ consciousness, whatever name you want to call it. But at that level, he is now identified as a light of God. He's in a timeless state. The reason he doesn't eat the animal is because the animal tendencies tend to pull him down from that state. Peter, when he was on top of the building and he was meditating, he saw a large cloth with all the animals going in as food. And he said, Lord, all these things are unclean. And he heard a voice saying, everything I have made is clean. But the normal person reading that, who has no understanding of the initiate life, would think the Lord God himself spoke to Peter. But the actual entity that spoke to Peter was the Lord of creation, the Lord of karma, that spoke to Peter, not the Lord Satpurush, the eternal being. The Lord of creation spoke to Peter. Peter was not fully Christ realized. He didn't know the difference. Therefore, he ate and violated the principle. Now, the result of his violation was there were some people who were supposed to give a portion of this substance to the community building. And when they gave what he thought was very small in comparison to what they were supposed to give, he wished them to be dead. And the husband and the wife fell down and died. He misused the Paul by his animal tendencies of greed. And when he saw Paul in the house lecturing to the Romans and the Greeks, again his jealous nature, brought on by the wolf consciousness of him, he automatically got out of the house and passed a blind man who asked him to heal him, but he paid no attention. His own animal tendencies dragged him down. But when he was able to reconsole himself and realize that he was not fully Christ realized yet, he turned around and passed the man, and by passing him, his shadow fell on the man this time, and the man was healed, showing that the initiate, when not in Christ consciousness, still can fall down. He still can act out all the animal tendencies. Now, we see pictures of yogis sitting on tiger skin meditating. This is a classical picture that comes from the East. Rest assured, the yogi may sit on a tiger skin to meditate, but it's no ordinary tiger. You just don't go pick up a tiger and sit down and meditate on him, a dead skin. It's a tiger that has killed a human life. That tiger that kills the human life is hunted down like a common criminal by the community consent of the people, and he is assassinated or punished. Then his body is stretched out in the sun for 21 days, dried and brought to a holy man or a spiritual person to reconcile the forces between the animal kingdom and the human kingdom. That's why the yogi will sit down and do all the karmic actions of reconciling these forces between the dead man and the dead animal. There are laws at work in the inner realm do not permit the animal to have supremacy over man. Man is that being who must be pure all the way back to the Christ intelligence before he can fully identify with the Creator. So food is the very first principle that the initiate life revolves around. He tries to make it as simple as possible. The second principle that the initiate life revolves around is alcohol. He doesn't use the alcohol because it throws off the gyroscopic action of the brain. And we are going into inner space when we meditate. We are going into a different dimension of existence. And once the gyroscopic action of the brain starts to falter and cannot center itself on the pole star within, it will deviate and go down into the lower astral realm and be trapped in it. Now, by yourself, you can't get out in the lower astral realm. Only a realized master can take you out from the lower astral realm. Even the Lord of Karma will not take you out. He's your best friend, but your worst enemy. A God-realized master is the only one who can pull you out, providing you are initiated, because he is responsible to take you out. He is committed to take you out. That's why Jesus said, lo, I am with you always to the end of the world. Meaning in every level of creation, this Christ intelligence within a realized being is committed to see that you get back to the divine source. Otherwise, he is not committed. So initiation is the bond that locks us to the Christ intelligence, that commits the Christ intelligence to see us get back to the source. It's like the salmon trying to get back to its spawning ground. No matter what the difficulties are, the salmon will still keep plunging to get back, even to die when it arrives there out of total exhaustion. Equally true, the initiate is dedicated to be pulled back up by the Christ intelligence right up to the last moment in consciousness. So alcohol is a deterrent, unless it's consecrated. There is the difference. In Holy Communion, there is the ritual, the necessary consecration. Then it has a different effect on the mechanism. Besides that, it has a very injurious effect on the mechanism. A saint will take a consecrated drink of alcohol, it will not affect him. But if it is not consecrated, he will have to vomit it up. It will not stay down. As in the case of Therese Newman, she could not eat food, and she did not want to eat food. Yet, the only thing that will stay down in her intestine was a consecrated wafer and a consecrated wine. This is the pledge of the inner mechanism. Now, the third discipline in which the life revolves with an initiate is drugs. An initiate does not refuse medical attention to his body, but he does not indulge in drugs for hallucinations or mental experiences for two reasons. One, the drug fractures the auric web, leaving him vulnerable to mediumship, vulnerable to possession by entities of the lower realm. Two, he becomes manipulated and may end up becoming a debuk. A debuk is that individual who refuses to reincarnate but tries to find some gullible individual to surrender his consciousness so that he would use the body and live through that body, pretending he's a realized individual. In your Hebrew writings, the debuk is the worst type of entity we know of. Here is somebody who surrenders his consciousness to allow another individual to attach itself and work through him, claiming to be realized. That type of entity does exist. In the case of the man who is obsessed by legion, when he brought him in front of Jesus, the first thing, before Jesus could open his mouth to say anything, they all shouted out, "We know who you are." That means they recognized him as an initiate of the light. "Let us go in." He did not want to be exposed because they were refusing to enter into the human body to work out their karma. They were trying to get a cheap stowaway in another human's body to work out their particular gimmicks of fortune telling, whatever they want to do, and tormenting the men. Jesus did not expose them. He commanded them to depart in peace. They then left the human body, entered the animal body. We see now, here is a disincarnate entity that was once occupying their own bodies before they were thrown out of it by death, and then occupying an individual who was similar to the same structure like them. Now, after confronting an initiate, they're forced to throw themselves into the animal form. They occupy the body of the swine and then cause the swine to commit suicide, thereby releasing them of the karmic condition. Now they were thrown into the force field of the Lord of Karma to go face their karma eventually. They'll have to take on a human form to work out their violation of the life forms that they possess. So when you see some people born decrepit, invalid, don't feel too sorry for some of them. You may feel compassion in your heart and want to change it, but rest assured, some of them have earned it, because they have violated certain laws and that's what their punishment is. A master does not always want to alter the karma of certain individuals, let alone initiate some of them. He will refuse some of them, because this is the punishment they were entitled to. And the individuals to whom they come to have to generate the love necessary to correct it, because those individuals they are born into may not have enough love in their heart for their fellow men, and therefore they are given that type of offspring to generate the love, to generate forgiveness to their fellow men. So many of the things we see around us is not just because some god up there is punishing us. No. The very individual, the very entity himself violated many rules and must be meted out at a level in which it can be compensated or corrected back by love. And it's the human love that he avoided and was afraid to come into a human body to face. He now must have it in a crippled body to be murdered by another human being to restore the balance. It's very difficult for a mother or father to love a crippled child. It takes tremendous love for one to know that this child is doomed for its whole lifespan in a crippled form, and that you have to generate love. But you have warned that type of confrontation to bring it out of you. And that is what is involved in that situation. And it's all leading back to drugs. Let us look for one moment. The drug scenery today is not a new thing. For centuries, man has used drugs to experiment to find God. In fact, there is one drug in the East. It's so powerful, it's been called the Soma drink. It's the mythical Soma drink, where you enter this cosmic consciousness, as they claim, not really cosmic consciousness, but if you can drink it, you will stay up in some level of consciousness for a long, long time. Man has been experimenting over and over to find some type of a shortcut to God realization. He does not want to face the ups and downs of rational living, ethical living, the forgiveness and the compassion, the asking for release from his fellow men and the forgiveness from his fellow men. We are placed in the body to ask forgiveness from our fellow men. We are not placed in it to run away, to escape, and use shortcuts. The creative intelligence has already organized it in such a way that we will get our release if our own fellow man offers it back to us in the form of love. We can be healed instantly because it's God who heals us. Nobody else heals us. He heals us from within ourselves when we are willing to accept that particular confrontation. Someone does you a harm or a hurt, and if you got enough guts to go and ask that individual or go to them and ask or forgive them, that particular confrontation can release and bring out tremendous healing. But if you use any shortcut method to avoid it, it only compounds itself more and more. It's when we go back and face it, then we can bring about this release. Forgiveness is necessary in the human body to release a great deal of karmic debt. It's a very important process. So, the third discipline of the initiate life is we don't use the drugs to hot lap the brain or to get extrasensory ideas from it or hallucinations. The fourth discipline is that the sex life is involved with your own married partner. Every other person is your brother and sister. The reason behind that, as Jesus said, he that looketh upon another committeth adultery. And when two have become one flesh, they are supposed to live as one. Marriage is a bond that connects the force field between two human beings. That's why it's called union. The creative forces are brought into a state of union. If the act of sex is performed in violence, as in rape, the aura present in the act is black. The offspring can be distorted. the whole force field of that offspring is detrimental. It never changes. Even the courts sometimes will grant an abortion just to protect the mother or the sanity of the one that is being violated. So any type of act in violence without marital or parental consent is a violation of the creative force. The second is to perform the act of sex without being married. That is under guilt reaction, under rebellion. Because one wants to rebel against one's society, and one wants to feel that one is superior than the parent, or one does not want to be involved in a commitment to each other, that child, the error is gray-green. The very act itself is done in guilt. No matter how we tell ourselves that it can be done to satisfy our feelings of lust or our feelings of enjoyment or pleasure, it is still a violation of the creative force. That creative force is never forgotten, because you are dealing with God, and God is that power that is committed to laws. Where guilt is in the mind, it affects the offspring. Where violence is in the mind, it affects the offspring. So performing the act of sex in violence, under rape, or without consent by guilt reaction, these two actions produce offspring of a very lower consciousness, and they attract the entities waiting to inhabit a body to work out the lower nature of their karma. Now, when the act is performed by mutual consent, publicly, openly, as in marriage, the commitment to each other, the aura is pink. This is by divine reaction to each other. Therefore, the two individuals are committed to each other. Now, the one big problem in modern day marriage, the fault lies on the priest. He is the guy who made the wrong programming in the ceremony. When he married people years ago, he said, for better, for worse. Therefore, in the first part of the marriage, everything was good, and the last part, it became worse. He is to blame for that. He set up the wrong thought pattern in the married couple's mind. Today, it has to be taken out or reversed, for worse, for better, so that as you think, that is what you are. We don't realize how much we have been damaged or hurt by the marriage ceremony being performed and presented in that manner. When we look at the tremendous breakdown in society, the fault must go back to the individual priest, and I don't mean the initiate. It must go back to the priest or the churchianistic side of religion for that fault, for that particular responsibility. They instituted a wrong terminology, a wrong mental programming, and thereby causing tremendous distress in lives today. The initiate marriage is based upon love, trust, and service, and the commitment to the inner life. So the early stages of a person's life may have conflicts, but as they grow together, it becomes better. So we say, no longer say, for better, for worse, we say, for worse or for better. And that is to make the individual realize that he is progressing consciously. Those are the four disciplines. The last one is, we must give back to God what belongs to God. Jesus said, render unto Caesar what is Caesar, and render unto God what is God. Many of us believe we can render unto God what is God, but we don't know what to render back to God. If we knew what to render back to God, then my conversation here would be necessary. Do you realize what has to go back to God?
Love.
All these belong to God. You don't, that you haven't rendered that back to Him. Those things that you mentioned belong to Him already. The only thing you give back to God that belongs to Him, that you are using in 24 hours, is the incoming breath. That's why it's called income. You pay income tax on the income that you receive on the solid substance of matter. The income of survival as a being is air, the pure breath of life. You are allowed to use it in 24 hours. 1/10 portion is the origin of fighting. That period is donated back to God to shut down and enter into a state of oneness with Him. You're required to render this back to Him. You're required to give back 1/10 portion of the breath cycle. That's why Paul said, I rebuke you in your rejoicing, for I live and die daily in the Lord. He knew a special method of shutting down the mechanism to return back that internal flow of energy back to the Creator. This is the only thing we owe the Creator. Everything else belongs to Him. He takes the breath back when He wants, but He wants us to return it back voluntarily so that we may live longer and achieve realization in the body. If we shut down consciously, that is, if we learn the art of life control or the art of how to die daily, then we are returning back to the Creator, the vital power, loaned to us to activate this mechanism. Then we will be given that particular gift of life control, and you will state, as Jesus stated, no man take my life from me. I have the power to lay it down and take it up. How could Jesus make such a statement unless He had spent a great deal of time recycling this energy, giving it back? He would have to have spent time devoting that energy back to God, the creative life. He would have to spend time shutting down. 2.5 hours, or you say 2 hours and 40 minutes, is 1/10 portion of 24 hours. Is what is required in the individual's life to shut down. This is broken up into 3 periods of the day. 1 hour in the morning, 1 hour at night, and 40 minutes in the middle of the day. These are the periods of shutting down in the inner consciousness. Your Book of Psalms tells you in the very first verse in the first Book of Psalms, man must meditate day and night on the right law. And when he does that, all the material life begins to improve, because he is giving back exactly what belongs to the Lord. Fighting is not giving 1/10 portion of your money out of your pocket. This has been an outcome of the ILA. The true fighting is giving back the divine energy to the Creator so that you will be a force field for that Creator. And in that force field, all that you need will start flowing to you. There will come a time that you don't need anything from this material world, because you will be endowed with the power to crystallize thoughts at will. Now, the fully realized man lives in a breathless state. If you read the autobiography of a yogi, it states that Lahiri Mahesha could be seen sitting down for hours and days in the breathless state. So we are talking of a definite science in which the initiate is involved. These are the 5 disciplines, because they govern the 5 senses. They govern the 5 deadly sins. Lust, anger, greed, hatred, ego. The initiate life revolves around that. Everything else is not the initiate life. The initiate life is not a hand-down existence. It's a joyous existence. Everyone earns his livelihood. It's plain, simple, but it involves these 5 forces that corrode the soul. God realization is built upon those five forces: food, alcohol, drug, sex, meditation, or shutting down. So you see, early Christianity and other religions have built their philosophy around these five principles. In the Jewish religion, you find the kosher food. And also you find in the Eastern countries they don't drink alcohol, and in some countries they don't even allow them to have drugs nearby for their healing. And some of them don't even allow them to participate in the sex act. But these are all abstinences. They are not understanding. Meditation is enforced. But again, these are all done by coercion. It's not done by love and understanding. When it's done by love and understanding, the initiate life is very simple, because love and understanding presents the picture to you how the creative force is set up. In your eating habits, it's already organized by the plant life. In the alcohol, Jesus gave the Holy Communion, and that is the only time the alcohol was ever mentioned or used. And that particular ceremony, I myself take. Any other ceremony in the church, I have long gone from it. But I understand all of them and their true mystical meaning, how they work. But as an outward ritual, still maintaining the church, I partake in the Holy Communion, no matter where it is. Because the forces that are lined up under the very ritual brings in the angelic host present. And even if an individual is not mystical enough, whatever is gained by contact with the Holy Communion raises his consciousness closer to the Christ intelligence. So one who partakes in his own church community should not refuse to take Holy Communion. He should always partake of it, even though you may not have inner mystical experiences yet, or you may not feel committed to your church in any way. That is one portion of your religious background should always be maintained till you get to a higher level of development. It is very important for the growth. It's the only time that the alcohol is accepted as a spiritual principle. As far as the drugs, I don't think you need to do that for your brain. The act of sex, again, this is under marriage, and the responsibility and the commitment to one another. Another reason for why the act of sex is only done between the married couple: a spiritual master cannot be born in a home of a non-initiate, because primarily he is an initiate of the highest order, and he can only enter in the home of parents who are in the initiate life. Anytime you hear of a great master being born, check it out. The parents have to be initiates. This is the reason behind the marriage life, because we are endowed with that responsibility to bring forth beings into the world who will carry on the light in the world. And the initiate is the light of the world while he's in the world. Every time you enter the initiate life, you become the light of the world. You carry a great responsibility of being the light of the world by living a very simple life. And the responsibility is not to convert others. The responsibility is to get back to the creative source in one incarnation. Meditation, you'll practice an hour a day, hour at night, and a 40 minutes in the middle of the day, depending on how you can adjust it to your own needs, or if you want to do the full 2.5 hours at night or in the morning. There will come a time in your growth where you'll be constantly living in a state of meditation, that your consciousness is wide open and you are in attunement. But in the early stages, you have to grow gradually. Now, after hearing all this, now you're not going to want to come back tomorrow night.
question about these four fields that you mentioned, that alcohol and drugs are often put in the same category. Are they really not? Because masculine, for instance, is used also in religious ceremonies. And are they really not basically on the same level? So why do you make it the same?
You can't use masculine as an initiate to go back to God. I've been through the Indian reservations and their prayer techniques. All of them have only reached consciousness acting on energy. None have reached consciousness acting on consciousness. And when I went into some of their ceremonies, what I did in their prayer meeting, they were amazed because they can't understand how I do it. Some of them have only gone as far as consciousness acting on matter, but they have tremendous occult powers. But when they see something that they place all their trust and call it God, and to see someone who doesn't come in and use none of their substances do something else, it puzzles them. One time there was a very sincere, devout man. He lived most of his life in Utah. He grew up among the Mormons, but he went back to his old tradition. And he was their road man, as you call the priest. And he had tremendous healing powers. And he started the prayer meeting one night, calling down all the forces that he knew. And take milk first. Milk products is neutral. And you can use it anytime. It's a neutral food, as far as the initiate is concerned. All the masters use milk. Preferably if they can get goat milk, so much the better. And they use butter, but they clarify it. Butter is they put it in a double boiler and melt it and skim out all the wax out of it. And they add honey to it and use it. So your milk products you can use any time, day or night.
So, and honey also.
And honey. Honey is neutral food. Honey, yeah. Milk, dates, avocado, brown rice. These are all neutral foods.
About margarine?
Yes, you can use that, but it's not it's a myth from a vegetable fat. So you have no problem there, that's a vegetable fat. You
know? Yeah, I wasn't here, but apparently you were talking about one who uses drugs, it would be 4 or 5 lifetimes before their mind would be back to where it was then.
Yes.
Correct. Well, is this hallucinogenic drugs or is marijuana included? I understand cigarettes and alcohol is not considered drugs. Is marijuana considered
drugs? Yeah, marijuana is considered hallucinogenic.
Is it?
Hmm. Marijuana is hallucinogenic because you can be dominated by the entity world. You see, once your nerve ends stop firing from the marijuana, you can enter into what is called energy acting on consciousness. And that particular energy will start taking over your body and start feeding. You'll start losing the ectoplasm of your body. And as soon as you lose the ectoplasm, then the entity will start feeding off of it and they'll start writing you and making it into a book, or convert you into a book. That is, the entity does not want to reincarnate to face its problem. They will find a healthy body of a person whose brain is attuned to that particular condition and will start draining the energy by giving them dreams. And as they start to use the body, before you know it, you'll be forced to take more and more marijuana, eventually going to harder drugs, because the body becomes more irritable and it becomes tired, very sleepy. And once it starts draining, then you find you're getting weaker and weaker. You find that the sexual nature starts increasing. And the body gets more and more toxic.
Well, you say that the marijuana, you have to go on, you want more and more and you go on a harder drugs. Well, it's been proven that not everyone is affected by marijuana that way.
That's not true. There's only a degree of tolerance. Each one varies. everyone has a breaking point in the hallucinogenic.
So what you're saying is that anyone who uses marijuana, given a chance, will go on?
Yeah, they have a different problem. It's like metal. Aluminum will melt at a certain heat, gold will melt at a certain heat, copper will melt at a certain heat, lead will melt at a certain heat. The degree of heat determines how much that metal will break down. Equally true, the brain cells of each individual, their tolerance is different. No two people have the same tolerances. So you can be a very healthy person, and one cigarette of marijuana can put you up. May take 50 from another person, may take 100 from another person to do it, but the accumulated effect is building up. Equally true in the other houses and drugs.
I have two questions. One, particularly on marijuana or harder drugs. A person that has done these drugs, and you're saying it's 4 or 5 lifetimes before their mind will be back to where they were here. You say now that in this particular lifetime, you cannot go through and try and fulfill some of that karma that you've already messed up in this lifetime, or do you have to just sit and wait till you die this time and come back for
it? No, you can work out some of it, but you can't work out all of it.
I think you could work out all of it. Number two, there are Indians in this country for thousands of years who
but they haven't reached God yet.
That's true.
I've met a lot of them.
They've been using peyote.
Yeah, I know them.
All right.
None of them has gone past consciousness acting on matter.
This is a basis for their entire religion.
Yes, I'm aware of that.
I wasn't here.
I studied there. I studied for years with them and showed them what they could do with their best occult powers, with their peyote. I still could do it with mantra.
It's my understanding that a lot of young people nowadays are getting, on drugs unknowingly. Like my doctor was telling me of a case that this girl, 16-year-old girl, went to a party and she was slipped LSD in a coat. Is there any way we could protect how young people are, et cetera? I mean, I don't think my children knowingly would take it, but unknowingly, isn't that?
Would that person be responsible then? If it was the doctor's understanding
of it? It's going to get worse. I'm not going to give you confidence, it's going to get worse. This is part of the Aquarian Age purging. We're going through a purging process where many people are going to exploit others for the sake of getting even in society. We don't have human beings walking in human bodies, we have animals walking in human bodies. It's very rarely you'll find a human being. What we see around us that appears to be human beings uses to call them wolves and sheep clothing. Many people have animal tendencies dominating them, merely not only from drugs, from the eating of the meat and the accumulated thought patterns from past lives that come back here merely to be ravenous beings on others, to prey on society for their weaknesses. And they can't help it. Many are caught up in this particular process. Many are brought back to incarnate for the things that they've done in previous lives that they're afraid to face, have to face it and do it, and they're doing it very, very cruel to them. This is why it's going to get worse.
But, when we were discussing the drug problem before that came in, it was my understanding that you were talking about when someone took drugs and it broke the aura, that after initiation, the aura is mended.
Yes, the master will seal it back at initiation because of his grace.
But does that still mean he has to work it out? If there is
No. If he seals it back, he absolves you, he takes the load. Mm-hmm. That's what they call the remission.
But if it's broken again.
He's not going to take it back. He'll push you out into your conscious, like Yukteswar did to the boy in the autobiography of the yogi. He said, I hate to tell you to go out and let the world be your teacher. So he told Yogananda to go tell the boy, don't let the boy stay in the ashram no more. The boy was smoking and drinking and indulging in all types of things. Yukteswar had initiated the boy, but it broke his heart to see that the boy was breaking these things after initiation. So he sent Yogananda to tell the boy, to leave the ashram. And the boy had to leave the ashram. He was compelled to grow up. And the world became his teacher. That means he had to go through the world cycle to learn. A master is a compassionate being. He will assume the karma at the time of initiation to work it out for you with his own body pattern. But if we don't appreciate that and we drop back because we feel that we can get away with it, you can't blame the master for throwing it back in your head. I wouldn't. So the master is a very compassionate person. He loves you from that standpoint to give you part of himself. But he hopes that you would realize that you have something of value now, take and hold and grow with it. Now if you don't, then the actual karma comes back to you and you have to work it out. Sometimes it takes 4 to 5 lifetimes to work it out. This is the problem with it. It's not worse. The drug karma is worse than the meat karma or the alcoholic karma. The meat karma takes a while to work out too. But what is worse is when you fracture the auric web because this continues to repeat itself in each incarnation you come in. You can be coming in with the deformed bodies. Now, that's what the danger is, being born again with deformed bodies. There's where it makes it difficult. So a master can't constantly take your problem. He's got to relieve you and make you aware of your responsibility. So if we don't accept that particular gift to us, then we deserve the divine justice. We can't blame no one for it. We have to blame ourselves for our own mistakes. So we have to be thankful that the master will do this for us at initiation, to absorb us of that condition. I run into this situation too. I've seen people who were initiated, they're initiated, they were absolved at the time of initiation, their lives have changed, and suddenly they decided to go back. I can't stop them. They have to pay the penalty of going back. Now they're in the misery. It's very hard for me to tell them, friend, I can't do anything for you. The masters are not going to do anything for you. It's up to you now from what you want to do, from your next life. This is your problem. I've seen this, I have the type of problem existing with initiate. An initiate can fall. Until you reach Christ consciousness, he can fall. Praying for the initiate and helping him to hold fast, we all can do that. But it's still the initiate who's got to make up his mind, is he willing to give up or not? It's very easy to flip back. It's very easy to fool oneself. It's very easy to say, I prefer the experiences I get from seeing inside. There aren't no spiritual experiences in the first place. Hallucinogenics do not give spiritual experiences. I have proven it to the very Indians that live here in America. They aren't genuine experiences. And when they're exposed to them, they themselves have to admit it's not genuine. Because you can, until a person really knows how this inner mechanism works, he's going to be fooled by the Lord of creation. And that's his game. To test us all the way until we have a pure heart. That's why the attitude states in very specific terms, blessed are the pure in heart, for they see God. It's only those individuals can see God or achieve Christ consciousness. Every impurity's gotta get out of the heart. And you can't hide behind no idea and use it as an excuse. There's no such thing inside there. You're exposed from the time you walk into that consciousness. In other words, every man's business is known in Christ consciousness. Where are you going to hide it? You can't have a thought to hide. It says, I am with you to the end of the world. There's not a single place you can hide from this Christ intelligence. And though heaven and earth will pass away, not one jot, not tittle of my word will pass away. This whole creation can be blown up a million times with atomic bombs, but you still cannot get rid of that thought inside. It's there till you pay for it. That's the problem, one thing. So when we wake up to it and accept it, we are given the grace. What we need to pray for is the strength to hold fast. We need to pray for that every day. We're going to feel the pulls in our mechanism because we are tempted, we are tested. But as long as we pray for the strength to hold fast, we will make it.
Won't we be given extra help?
Yes, you're given extra help because of the techniques that help you to break the patterns. That's why you're given certain techniques to help you grow up in consciousness. So you're at levels where you can insulate you against the pull. A master is pulling you up all the time. He's helping to pull you. But remember, he can't meditate for you. And he can't totally, he's going to help you. I've seen this done. One time, somebody slipped, an initiate, and the orange juice LSD after he was initiated at the party. The boy didn't know. Before he was initiated, he did take drugs. At the party he went to, they slipped him a glass of orange juice with LSD. I was meditating that night and I felt it. By the grace of God, it was cancelled out. He didn't know, he didn't deliberately do it. When nothing happened at the party, the friends all got worried. What happened? They began to question. And then he found out what had happened was one big squabble. But then he came and told me the story. And I said, the Master's grace has blessed you. As long as you didn't deliberately take it, knowingly with your will, they will always protect you to the end of time. The day you deliberately take it, they are not going to do a single thing for you. This is the law of the spiritual life. They are granting you grace to keep you humble, to show you, regardless of how we fall, from a lower, high level to a lower level, by our own mistakes, prior to initiation, they will absolve you. After initiation, if somebody tries to hurt you, they will protect you just to convince you that what they mean in the Bible, a man of God, if you take up poison, it will not harm him. As long as he does not deliberately try to impress anybody who wants to drink poison, to say that he can drink poison. You can pass the substance to him after initiation. And if he did not deliberately take it, the Master Consciousness will protect it. And I've seen that over and over. So the person is protected. But the day he decides deliberately to violate consciously with his own mind, the Master will not protect it. And I've seen that too, people who have done that. And the Master is not protecting them. Yes, his will has broken the obligation. He's no longer humble. He's become egotistical again. The Master will protect you as long as you stay humble within his consciousness. That's his commitment to you. The moment you push it off and exert your own ego, and that's what we call not going by the divine will. The Master's will is divine will. When you're doing it by ego will now, just to prove a point, you have to pay the consequences. I'd rather obey after learning the truth than to disobey and have to go do it all over again. We must be thankful that we're given a chance. We all make mistakes. I don't care who we are. We all made mistakes prior to initiation. But when we realize what is open to us, what is offered us, then it's ridiculous to hide behind excuses when we know that we can be helped. Larry Alpert, two of the leaders, one refuses, the other accepted. The one that refused is in exile in Algeria and he's a cripple. And the one that accepted is back in this country working to help the other young people to get out of it and has attained in this life that degree of consciousness which very few men can achieve by giving up. He has actually been helped by this Swami to get to that state. To hold on to it. He lives now in Arizona. And he has a spiritual name, they call him Baba Ram Dass. But he has been helped by going to India to finally meet some Indian Swami to help him pass those levels. Larry would not accept. Larry has gone to live in hiding in Algeria. A miserable man, no. But look what he's done to society. He's left a whole stream of broken souls. Only because he's stubborn and the other one has made up for the mistake. He has learned the truth. Then he saw what the teacher could do, and the teacher didn't do it to impress him here. Is when he thought that was all there was in his conversation with the teacher, that the drugs was the thing. And the teacher told him it was not the thing, he couldn't see it. Then the teacher said, all right, give me all that you got. And he drank it and gave him back the bottle. That was sufficient to convince Alfred. But we don't do this primarily to show off, we do it to help a person beyond a certain point, so that he will get grace. Anything a spiritual teacher is doing for us is to give us the grace, give us the compassion, give us the absolution for our mistakes. The love never dies out in a spiritual teacher for the human being. It is always there, regardless of how many mistakes we make. He will always love him, but he will not correct him if he reluctantly disobeys. Like in the case of the autobiography with the boy, the teacher did extend love to the boy, even though the boy wantonly disobeyed. He made the other boy send him away. He could not hurt him to send him away. So he had the boy send away the other boy. The teacher would not wantonly say, get out of my sight. But he inwardly feels great remorse for the person. Now the teacher does not abandon you. He will still maintain love for you whenever you decide in your mind to turn around. The moment you decide to turn around, he will send you back your strength. He will pick you up like a dirty child, wipe your face, and set you back on the path. But he will have to extend the karma into whatever life form he feels is practical for you to handle. This is his obligation. Yes. But I don't know of where any drug practice has brought God realization to any human being. I've made a very long study of this concept, and I don't know them. Saints aren't produced like typewriters off of an assembly line. They earn their badges by long suffering.